You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to a Labor Day edition of the Grizzden Podcast. Everyone else has taken off, but the Grizzden Pod is not. And with that, I'll welcome John Kraft to the show. What's up, John?
Good to be here. So excited to do a little podcast real quick.
Yeah, we've got some things that we've had on the list for a while just to get to, and some news, a lot of talk about hypotheticals in the future that are broadly related to the Grizzlies and will have definitely an impact on the fans and the city as a whole. So I'm excited to get into those. But first, we have a couple of news updates. The first is that the Grizzlies signed Gigi Jackson the second to a two-way contract officially. This was on August 31st. This was to be expected for sure. I don't think a roster spot was ever in play, especially based on Zach Kleiman's comments right after the draft, where he actually identified the range at which in the second round guys are not expecting necessarily to be guaranteed a roster spot. He said around the mid-40s is when you start to see guys getting drafted for two ways. And so glad to get that officially done. And then secondly, the team signed Shaquille Harrison, another guy who's been around the Grizzlies organization. And my expectation there is that this will likely be a training camp signing. You can have more roster spots available until a certain date where the season gets closer, and then you're supposed to cut that down to 15 main roster and two-way spots. So, John, what do you think about those two signings?
Yeah, I think Gigi's pretty self-explanatory. I mean, despite, you know, showing some flashes, and I think for both of us being better than we expected, honestly. I expect him to basically have a full G League year if he comes, you know, if he plays at all with the main team. It would hopefully be because we've clinched a really high seed later in the year and not because we've had a bunch of injuries. So so I feel like, you know, you might see similar to kind of Kenny Lofton last year kind of coming in towards the end of the year. And then with Shaq Harrison, I think a lot of the speculation is with him is we kind of gave him probably some kind of Exhibit 10 type where you give him kind of a bonus for coming into training camp, maybe a guaranteed G League roster spot. But I think the speculation is that right now, if he has a good training camp, if he has a good preseason, that the Grizzlies are going to look for him to be that opened roster spot in Game 6 because of the Ja Morant suspension, that that after five games of the regular season, we get an extra roster spot until Ja comes back. And a lot of people, because he's a guard. He's not a pure point guard, but he can play point guard. He's very defensive. He's a typical Grizzly, and just he kind of fills up the box score with all sorts of different things. That he would be the 15th man on the roster taking Ja's spot until he comes back. It's kind of speculation as long as he has a good training camp and stuff.
Yeah, this Exhibit 10 deal is a way, like you said, to get guys paid and not necessarily guarantee them anything except for that kind of one-time payday, which has been a vehicle to make certain agents happy, and also to get a further look at guys that you might consider later on in the future when you're really having to be conscious about your costs. And the Grizzlies are certainly going to be in that position here in the next few years. If you look at the Phoenix Suns, they're an example of a team that has a few huge contracts, a fourth that is pretty big but not terrible, but then the rest of their guys, they're having to kind of scrap and claw their way to that 15-man roster without going too far above the luxury tax. So I'm excited to see what the Grizzlies end up doing with that extra roster spot with Ja Morant for sure. Kraft, how much have you watched the FIBA World Cup so far?
So I've watched a pretty good. I've watched all the games that came on around 7:30. I've missed the ones that come on at 3:40 in the morning. I think even I'm not as enough of an addicted degenerate to watch the 3:40 a.m. Basketball game. But I've watched most of them, and I've been excited to see both Jaren and Santi play. We actually have gotten to see a little bit of old Dylan too. He's moved on, but it's been interesting to watch them play. And obviously Jaren has been very exciting. I think, some people have been tweeting. It's been interesting because Jaren continues to be this polarizing. He's not polarizing as in the Grizzlies fan love him, but like kind of on Twitter and in the sort of NBA Twitterverse, that the casual fan being frustrated with often the box scores and watching him play, whereas the analytics suggest that he's the best player on Team USA, and that basically the Team USA wins when he's on the floor, that he's the most important player, despite maybe not putting up amazing box scores. So that's been very fascinating for me to watch. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the U.S. experienced their first loss in the game that was the other morning. I definitely watched that full game. It was actually yesterday morning. We're recording on Monday here. I watched that full game, and it's kind of one of those things where they've started slow in a bunch of these games, and the starting lineup has been, it's been consistent, but there's actually been a big change that Steve Kerr made, taking Brandon Ingram out and putting Josh Hart in, who's more of a connector piece and can rebound. And Jaren has been that anchor, but you saw a big shot variance game, as we noted, where they started 8 for 8, and then the U.S. just couldn't catch up. And I've also seen some hero ball tendencies out of Anthony Edwards. And yes, he's getting praised, he's getting all of that, and he's been a great alpha. I mean, the U.S. definitely needed an alpha on this team, but I can definitely see the blueprint for how we lose this tournament moving forward, and it's Anthony Edwards taking, you know, 3 or 4 too many shots and us getting lethargic on the defensive end and probably relying too much on Jaren, to the point at which he has gotten in foul trouble a bit, which is to be expected. And you don't have the 6 fouls like in the NBA. You have only the 5. So you have to stay conscious of that. But also, these teams have been playing together that aren't the U.S. team. Right. They've been playing together for years and years and years. And so you see, I can see the continuity in the way that they move the ball, and they can all shoot as well. And it's a smaller court. I mean, there's a bunch of different subtleties that allow the playing field to get level a lot more. I think the U.S., it's not going to be a cakewalk. They have Italy here in the quarterfinal, which they should take care of. But then after that, you have Germany and Latvia, whatever the winner is between the two. We saw the Germany game a couple of weeks ago, how close that was. And then on the other side of the bracket, you have a team like Canada, Slovenia, and Lithuania. Serbia doesn't have Nikola Jokic, which makes that team a little less intimidating. But, I mean, these are 8 legitimate basketball teams, and I don't think it's going to be easy for the U.S. Granted, they've qualified for the Olympics, right, and that's what they came out to do. But I certainly hope for Jaren's sake that he plays a bit better in these next few games and establishes himself as a potential starter even on the Olympic team moving forward next year.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Kerr does the like the old Ben Wallace ploy of like they usually run a play for Jaren the very first play of the game to give him a post touch, which he almost always gets double teamed. And he throws out of it. Every now and then he gets a play. But it's been weird because obviously Jaren is way better offensively than like a Ben Wallace. And also, he's not a Ben Wallace either. He's not a physically imposing player. He's a rim protector. and someone who can guard out in space. And so it's just been interesting the way he's used him. You know, and obviously for us, we know that we like to put Jaren with a kind of somebody with a four that's more of a traditional power forward or a center. And obviously the Team USA is going really small a lot, and leaving Jaren basically as the only rim protection, which when you have to protect the rim because guys are getting driven past, like Austin Reeves got killed yesterday, then he's not in a place to get rebounds. And so it's like it's a hard thing. And in some ways, maybe it's good for Jaren to get practice doing this, since we've talked about some really small lineups the Grizzlies could run out there next year with Marcus Smart. But all that said, you know, I think all the narratives I get frustrated with, of the fouls and everything else, you know, the lack of rebounding, because I just think there's a lot at play. And all I know is when he's on the court, we win. And honestly, you know, putting him back there with JV, you know, when they're bringing in like two big guys and Jaren has to guard sort of both of them and deal with that. Anyway, it's just, but all that said, I think he's played great, but hopefully he'll play a little better and stay out of foul trouble.
You mentioned his name. I was going to bring him up. Austin Reeves, the love is out of control. You're seeing the Laker bias all over the place. Yes. Yeah. Has he been a valuable plus-minus player off the bench? Sure. He and Tyrese Halliburton's play has been great. It's been stellar so far. Go and look at, you know, the 7 through 10 spots on each of these international rosters and tell me if you recognize anyone and look at their experience. I mean, they are playing against less than G League teams when the benches for these other teams. And yes, is Austin Reeves effective? I will grant you that, but I cannot in good conscience cheer for this player. I really cannot get over it, John. Like, it does not matter if he's wearing USA on the jersey. I hate watching him play. I hate watching him flop with, I mean, he's in his element.
The haven't been rewarding him too much, which has been nice.
They haven't, but I mean, you're also, he's in his element with all these Europeans who are, you know, have their own flopping tendencies. And I just cannot handle it. It's the love to, I mean, I try to just separate my fandom when I'm listening to these national podcasts, but it's just, it's insane. And I have much more Austin Reeves hate that I'm not going to waste your time with here on the podcast, but it's
throughout
been
the season. We'll bring it.
Sure. It's just been absurd. And I want that on the record.
And I'm similar. I mean, obviously, I love Anthony Edwards, the personality. I love the off court stuff. I think he's super fun. I am still a big skeptic of him as a, you know, as a big time scorer, as a guy, as an alpha, you know, and so that kind of too, because again, like what you're saying, I mean, he scored 35 points in a loss on 28 shots. And so what I would say is he's shooting too much. Other guys should be getting touches. And you know, does he make other people better? He's obviously super talented. And so I'm not going to diss on him too much, but again, it's like, that's what gets me frustrated about pundits, when it's just like, oh, look, he scored so many points. Well, how did he do it? How many shots did he get? Like, you know, how often did he take some hero ball shots that probably were not warranted, that kind of thing. So,
and what does it do to the rest of the team? It actually affects when you defer to a guy and a guy establishes himself and it's clear that he knows where he is in the pecking order. Everybody else starts to change their game. And so you're not seeing these – players that would be, you know, top 2-3 on their own team, they're playing like a fourth or fifth guy, which, you know, there's a level of sacrifice that everyone needs to have to make these USA teams great, and that's what makes them great. But when you're seeing one guy that's clearly not taking that sacrifice and instead is taking 28 shots in a loss, like you were saying, I mean, yes, are there times when you need the bailout talent there? For sure. But I just think you're also getting the overhype. Like, I wish there was more basketball conversation happening rather than just hype machines happening for a guy who will be good, but Minnesota has not proven yet that he can be the guy on a high achieving playoff team. So we'll see.
Yeah. And one final note, just, I think one of the things that you mentioned earlier about FIBA is how these teams have played together for a long time, whereas USA is kind of throwing it together. And that's one of the things we love about basketball, and why I talk about the culture stuff, and why we've always seen, you know, the Grizzlies, is this is a several-year process of becoming a, you know, becoming champions, hopefully, and that you don't just have that overnight. And that's why I think you and I both, especially me, are very skeptical of like big name free agents coming to a team and then all of a sudden that putting them over the line. Cause it's just hard, to jump, to throw a bunch of guys together and play at your peak level basketball. And so I think that's another thing that the USA team is going to have to come against, with some of these teams that have been playing together since they were really little.
Yep. So we'll be watching out for those games moving ahead. Okay. So next topic is the stadium funding that's happening right now. Well, I shouldn't say it's happening right now because nothing's happened yet, and it's a big debate. If you've been following along in local news, there has been $350 million passed for the 2024 budget, specifically for Memphis Stadium funding. And when I looked back at the actual Tennessee budget and all the different releases, they do list the Simmons Bank Stadium, which is the Liberty Bowl, and they mentioned FedEx Forum. And just to put in perspective, the, yes, $350 million in cold hard cash from the state. The overall budget for the year 2024 is $56.2 billion. So, yes, does that seem high? I've seen a lot of people saying, why are we allocating this much to stadiums anyway when you have so many other issues going on in the city and the state and things like that? Well, let's put in perspective what this amount is in the overall budget. There's $3.3 billion that's been bookmarked for fixing roads, for example. So, like, those things are taken care of. But the debate right now that we're having is how to split up the pie, so to speak. And the University of Memphis has been very vocal in the past couple of weeks. The president and the AD came out and had a press conference amid all the different conference realignment. And this season that just kicked off this past weekend, saying that, you know, we need to get this done. Like, this is something that's basically a requirement if we ever want to be in contention for a Power Five conference. And that's a separate conversation that we could have, which is what's going to happen to college football at large, even within the quote unquote Power Five, because I don't think you could even say it's a Power Five anymore. It's more like a Power 3.5. And then past that, the Grizzlies have not necessarily been disclosing what they're asking for. You haven't seen a lot of press. Jim Strickland, who's the current mayor, is set to leave office at the end of this year, and there's going to be a new mayor elected on October 5th who would take office January 1st, and so there's a political element to this. And so there, all these sides are posturing right now, and amidst all of it, it's important to note that the Grizzlies, if we were to look at the most recent stadium renovation that would be comparable to the Grizzlies, it happened in Indianapolis with the Pacers. It was a little over $400 million that it took to fully renovate and bring everything up to speed. You know, FedEx Forum has had small renovations in the past few years, but nothing that they would actually need to quote unquote keep up, in my opinion. So if you want to account for inflation, different things like that, we're looking at between $450 to $500 million probably when it's all said and done. There are a couple other funding mechanisms like sales tax rebates, rental car rebates, which, you know, we won't bore the audience with, but basically right. You can only predict so much what that funding will be. It looks like it could be a couple hundred billion dollars. And so anyway, there's just this debate that's going on right now. And John, we've been talking about it a bunch over text, but I'll just relay my thoughts to you here, and then you can tell me what you think about it. I just think that the Grizzlies are the draw when it comes to sports in the city. There, years and years ago, there was a potential to have an NFL team here. We have one now in Nashville, and they're about to undergo their own billion-dollar renovation or so, which took about $500 million in cash from the state of Tennessee. They also have their own funding mechanisms they're working with as well, and they also have some private money that's coming through from the owners and other groups like that. And so, in my opinion, FedEx Forum should be number one on the priority list. And yes, the lease itself right now, as it currently stands, was renegotiated last year and runs through the 28-29 season. Past that, there have been no conversations about the Grizzlies being here, and that's not too far away. 2029, you know, only six seasons from now. Think about how much I can vividly remember six seasons ago here at the end of the Grit Grind era. So it's not that crazy to start talking about it right now. And one of the very first things you can do to show that you are committed to an organization and want them here is to give them what they need in order to just bring their arena up to average. And that's where I think we are. The FedEx Forum right now is an old building. We saw a Drake concert recently that got canceled, and the rumor around that was that it's because the arena couldn't handle what they needed for to even have this production for one concert. And so, in my opinion, it is the University of Memphis. I love that they that we have a university here and that there's committed fans, but we have to be honest with ourselves. Where are the Grizzlies in the pecking order, you know, as it relates to Memphis football, not to mention Memphis basketball plays in the FedEx Forum? Hello, like, where would the city and the University of Memphis supporters rank basketball and football in their own university? I would say that most of them would rank basketball first. I just think this you're playing with fire, and I would hate for something like this, where we're trying to make everyone happy in a place where we should have at least one, we should have a defined top dog in the city, which is the Grizzlies, and do what they need to do to keep them and make them happy, and then you move on and everybody benefits from an upgraded FedEx Forum. I don't know how many people benefit from an upgraded Simmons Bank Stadium. So I just rambled a lot there, John. What are your thoughts on the matter?
No, I mean, I'll be even stronger. I mean, I'm someone who probably, I would say Memphis college football is probably, you know, one or two in my sort of college football fandom. You know, I obviously have huge ties to Memphis. I care a lot about the University of Memphis. My dad teaches there. My parents graduated from there. I'm utterly frustrated by it because we're talking about, like, the University of Memphis is not going to leave Memphis. The football team is going to continue to play college football here. And I don't think, you know, I don't think the Grizzlies want to leave Memphis, you know, and I think the NBA is going to expand in the next few years at the places that would want an NBA team. But I don't know why you would upset the Grizzlies in any way I'm going to be honest, a mid-major college football program. I mean, that's what the Memphis is. And you know what? We might get into a conference, but if Memphis gets into a conference and into a quote power, you know, whatever, I think it's a power two right now and then everybody else. But if we get into a conference, it's going to be a conference that's just been blown up. And, you know, this is where Memphis is. And I don't know if we can ever change anything about it. But at the end of the day, it's a mid-major football program. We're a high-major basketball program. Guess where they play? They play in the FedEx Forum. We have the Grizzlies, which, like, I agree, are the best. You know how, and I can even say that, there are more season ticket holders for the Memphis Grizzlies than there are season ticket holders for the Memphis Tigers football team. They play in a 60,000-seat stadium. The Grizzlies play in an 18,000-seat stadium. And the Grizzlies have more season ticket holders. Like, the fact that the mayor is even considering giving $200 million to update the Liberty Bowl when it is used 10 to 15 times a year. And, like, you know, we just played Bethune Cookman. 8,000 were announced as there. Everybody knows that they did not have 28,000 people there. And it's just, I could just see this being, having this really nice new stadium that's renovated for like 10 times a year. And even then, you know, I understand the fairgrounds and what's going on there, but it does not then bleed. It bleeds a little into Cooper Young, maybe around game time. But again, that's only 10 games. Think about FedEx Forum. Think about 41 home games, preseason games, playoff games. Think about the Memphis Tigers, 20 to 30 home games. Think of all the concerts. Think of the fact that it's on Beale Street, that people go to the stadium and then flood into all the downtown businesses. Like, to me, it's not even close. Like, when I would rank what's important to Memphis, I would rank the Grizzlies, I would rank the Memphis Tigers basketball, and I would rank concerts and musical entertainment before I would, you know, rank the Memphis football team. And they're just such a small minority of people that are super into Memphis football. And I was super excited. But guess what? When Memphis football came, I mean, when game day came in the best year of Memphis football history, where was game day? Game day was on Beale Street. Why? Because Beale Street is where everything is in Memphis. And that's why the FedEx Forum should just take major precedent. It's like very frustrating that this is even a conversation. And it does make me nervous because our mayor is a big Memphis booster, big Memphis University of Memphis guy. I do feel like he wants some kind of legacy thing here, but it just makes me nervous that we don't give the Grizzlies whatever they need, and then we give the leftover money to Memphis football. And if that's not enough to do Liberty Bowl, well, then go out and raise money from this, you know, from the city, from all your fans that claim we really need this. You know, like, show if Memphis cares that much. I know, just talking to people, and this obviously anecdotally, but I just seeing it all over the place, I just think Memphis football is third on the list of what people care about in the city, and I think it'll show that. So anyway, it's frustrating to me. I'm not nervous. Like, I'm not in like DEFCON 1 mode about it, but it makes me very nervous if we don't just give the Grizzlies what they want, because why upset such a good thing? I just don't understand it. And I am too. I want better concerts here in Memphis as well. So anyway,
100%. I mean, it's totally different from any other situation, where, you know, maybe Portland is one of the only comps, and, you know, I haven't looked into exactly what their status is on their stadium, but my guess is that the city would prioritize the Portland Trailblazers over, you know, whatever, the Portland Timbers, the MLS. Like, they would be treated fairly, and we need to do the same thing here. Also, just to mention before we get to our last topic, this did not need to be this complicated. The proposal to the state tied all of the Memphis arenas together on one item. They could have just as easily submitted them completely separately and had different arguments to the state with different timelines. And for some reason, they decided that this was the best way to do it, knowing that on the back end, they were going to have to divide everything out. And yes, the Grizzlies have a billionaire owner. They apparently took a little bit longer to put in their proposal for exactly what it would cost. But at the same time, you have to understand what the Grizzlies mean to the city, what FedEx Forum and downtown mean to the city. And it's undeniable when you look at it objectively. And I don't know right now if I would rather the new mayor, you know, inherit this or have part of the deal done where, you know, the University of Memphis is the one banging the table saying that they need to have the funds in order to get started, you know, in January or February. They need to have them now. And so if that gets done and then it's kind of whatever's left over for the Grizzlies to sort out, I just get nervous that all of a sudden the leverage is now with the Grizzlies rather than the city, especially after this renegotiated lease happened last year where the Grizzlies and the city seem to be working so well together on an agreement that would, you know, keep the Grizzlies here for another 6 years with, you know, certain fixed payments to the Grizzlies instead of having this clause that would have allowed the Grizzlies to just leave if the city didn't make up for the season ticket shortage. And so there's a lot at play here as we try to briefly go over. But the point I think the audience has taken away is this needs to get done for the Grizzlies. If not, it just leaves open all sorts of risk. And it's a risk not worth taking. I think we're going to look back in a couple years and just laugh when we see how college football continues to move in a direction that who knows who's going to get left behind. I mean, you're seeing major, major schools that like, you know, Stanford and others, that, you know, Stanford might have just joined the ACC, but just others like Oregon State and just bigger schools than Memphis is my point, that are going to also get left out in the cold, that have a lot more money and a lot more private funding. And it's just kind of the nature of the beast. You have to look at the external market factors when you're looking at this whole thing. So I think we've probably gone long enough on this unless you have more.
Yes. No, I mean, guess what? The NBA is going to be here for the next 30, 40 years. I don't even know what the NCAA and college sports are going to look like the next 20, 30 years, putting $200 million into an old building when honestly half Memphis faithful want a on-campus stadium that's newer anyway. So with that, I know we've talked enough about it, but yeah, it's frustrating.
All right, we have about 4 or 5 minutes here left. John, what is going on in the media landscape?
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, you know, if we ever need to fill time, we can talk forever on the media stuff because I know you and I find it super fascinating. But for me, the real quick sort of thing and why I think our Grizz Den listeners will care about it is because I know y'all like to watch the Grizzlies. And there's two kind of big sources of revenue for the team. One of them is the national TV package that is being negotiated right now, which will probably be announced in the next year and a half. And I think as we see the Grizzlies, I think being better and better, and we expect them to be really good for the next 4 to 6 years and be a big draw, I think we're going to get, you know, 10 to 20 national TV games every year. And so it matters where, you know, what kind of packages, what things, what subscriptions are we going to have to get to watch that. And that goes to all the teams. And then locally, you know, in the past, we've had a local carrier, an RSN, Regional Sports Network, like Bally, that shows the local games that aren't on national TV coverage. And they pay just the Memphis Grizzlies themselves. And so one of the things that's crazy about going on media right now is, one, the national TV package is very much up for grabs in a time when, you know, if you notice the strikes going on at the studios, Disney, which owns ESPN, really struggling, being Amazon and Apple being rumored to think about buying it. Like, there's just all sorts of chaos. You probably noticed with college football this weekend how, like, there's just a lot of movement, a lot of places and different things. You're having to figure out where everything is on streaming. You got Big Ten games on Peacock now. It's like, it's kind of a crazy landscape. And so that's coming for the NBA. And obviously we want a big package because we want our salary cap to be high because we're paying all some really good players. But then locally, we've been discussing a lot with the Bally and the fact that Bally is going bankrupt, that it looks like they're not going to last. But there was an Athletic article recently that said that that the NBA is expecting Bally to at least make it this year. And so it looks like that at least the local games that aren't on national TV will be on Bally again. And so Bally offers, you know, through the cable packages for those extra sports packages or direct to consumer. And it looks like that's the case. I think that what you saw in baseball this year was that Bally not be able to make certain payments and drop teams. I don't expect the Grizzlies, with being a draw, Ja Morant, with honestly our geographical footprint, which is really a lot of Mississippi, a lot of Arkansas, a lot of Alabama, a lot of Tennessee, that I don't think Bally would want to get rid of us because we're going to be good. And I think, obviously, Memphis fans, one of the reasons we have an NBA team is we're really into basketball. I just feel like they would drop a New Orleans, Orlando, Charlotte, maybe a couple other teams before us. So it does look like we're going to be on Bally for at least a year, but it does bring in interesting questions for what is the future. Because if it's direct, you know, is the team going to take control of it? Are a bunch of small market teams going to come together and come up with some package? Like, there's just a lot of really interesting scenarios because the NBA's always left it up to teams with revenue. And obviously, you know, the Grizzlies have always been a small market team with small revenue. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But the initial news is it does look like it'll be on Bally this year. So if you're a Grizzlies fan, it looks like you might have to, if you have cut the cord, get that direct to that DTC Bally app and pay whatever. I think it was $20 a month or something like that. But anyway, so what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in that same article, it said the NBA is prepared to take over production for this season if something were to go sideways with Bally, or I would more expect them to just float whatever it would take to the Bally network in order to just, you know, take it through the end of the season. It did that last year as well, while it's figuring all this out. And it is interesting. I wasn't aware back when we talked about this story. I feel like it was in May or April. And at that point in time, we didn't realize, or at least I didn't realize, that you could actually, they could, you know, individually select the teams that they want to default on. And so that makes it even more interesting, more layers here to see which teams it could honestly reveal value in a lot of ways to see which teams they decide to drop or not. And I know that there's a lot more factors than just the quality of the team that would, right, that would contribute to a decision like that. But the point seems to be that, you know, my Grind City Media theory will probably wait for the 24-25 season, and it would be a kind of a quick turnaround were they to have to put that together in the next month and a half. Not to say that they haven't been working on it already. We saw an example of it in Summer League when they were streaming on the app, and it seemed like the quality was fine enough. From what I saw,
and they've been pushing a new app for this season, so
that's right. Yeah,
you know,
I've seen those emails
with as well.
So yeah, all that to say, you know, we'll be keeping close tabs on it, but Bally is here for this coming season, and that's where you'll have to deal with it and the low production value that Bally Sports is for yet another year, which is frustrating because I did not like that app at all. But it kind of is what it is, and we'll see how long the cable bundle at large even lasts. There's an existential question going on with that as well, right, as ESPN decides what they want to charge in terms of carriage fees.
Yeah, so. And as we're recording, there's a big news out of, because ESPN's had 100 million customers down to 70, so they've lost 30 million worth of monthly subscribers these last few years. And then 20 to 25% of that are Charter customers, and Charter is now in this really war with ESPN, not showing, now with football starting, not showing ESPN, making all sorts of crazy claims about wanting Disney Plus for free and all this stuff. But all that said, is there's just a lot going on in the streaming world, and so who knows? It looks like everything's going to be normal this year, and it looks like that any kind of direct-to-consumer ESPN product that would have the Grizzlies on it would wait for probably another year as well. So it looks like, so basically it's just a lot of speculation, but it looks like it's going to be mostly status quo for this year in the NBA. But I think it's going to be really crazy. This time next year, we're going to have to be explaining to everybody how to find Grizzlies games, because I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of changes. So,
yeah. Well, I'm glad we did this. Know that we had some kind of wide-ranging topics, but there still is a lot going on despite the dead period. And hopefully in the next, we know that in a few weeks we'll have a special episode coming your way. But then after that, we're going to be in the last few weeks before the season kicks off, and we'll have preseason games. We'll have our traditional podcast coming your way. All of our predictions for the season will come on those, and I'm really looking forward to that as the rosters are finalized and we get into training camp here later this month. So, Kraft, thanks for joining me on this Labor Day. Shout out to Grizzden listeners at large. We have some fun other news to announce on our next podcast as well, and we can't wait for this season, and we will talk to you very soon.